My name is Grant Gray, that's G-R-A-Y. The date today is Thursday, April the 4th, 1985, and I'm here today with Captain Pat Hamill. And we're in her home, which is out in, what's this area here?
Gordon Head.
Out in Gordon Head. And I wonder if I could begin, Pat, with asking you, when and where were you born?
I was born in London, England, in 1918, January 1918.
Mm-hmm. And could you give a brief family background?
Yes, my father, of course, was overseas in the First World War. Mm-hmm. He enlisted in the Canadian Army in 1911, served overseas in the First War. He was a master gunner, and in 1939 was commissioned and served in Canada during the Second World War. So my military background, or at least I should say, I did have a military background in that all of my childhood years were spent in barracks, even an old army fort.
And where was your schooling then?
In Halifax. My dad was stationed in Halifax from 25 to 1925, that is, to 42. And I was educated at the Halifax Academy. Had my senior matriculation and 1 year commercial course.
And so about the militia then, there apparently wasn't any militia for women.
No, there wasn't.
The
only women in the Canadian Armed Forces in 1939 were nursing sisters. They were with the medical corps, and however, just shortly after 1939, across Canada, women's units were organized, but they were not recognized by the Canadian Army, although much of their training was done by members of the Canadian Army. These women were war uniform, and it was largely due to their efforts that the Canadian Women's Army Corps was formed. They lobbied for the Corps, and I think showed that with their training that they could help and they could release men for duty overseas and do a lot of jobs that men were doing in Canada.
And you were never a part of this?
No.
So 1939, September, war breaks out. What were you doing at that time?
I was working as a secretary to the manager of Eaton's in Halifax. And I was still working there when I enlisted in 1941 in the Canadian Army.
And what were your reasons for joining?
Well, as I mentioned earlier, I had been raised in a military family. And if I had been a boy, would have wanted to go to Royal Military College. Of course, at that time, there were no women in the service, and certainly they're just getting around to having women officers attend military college now in 85. And what was the question again? I think I've digressed.
It was your reasons for joining.
As I say, I did have a military background, and then, too, I wanted to do something to help the war effort. And there wasn't too much a woman could do at that time, at least prior to the CWAC being organized.
When war broke out, the conditions in Canada were, let's say they were not prepared for war. What was the clothing and uniform situation when you joined?
There were no uniforms for women. I think they put the cart before the horse. They enlisted women into the Canadian Women's Army Corps before they had accommodation set up or before they had uniforms ready for us. In fact, when I enlisted, I was posted very shortly afterwards to District Depot in Halifax, where I worked as a secretary. And then we were given basic training, a month's basic training. We wore our civilian clothes. It was quite impossible to march around the parade square in high heels, so we were provided a pair of shoes. We were all taken down to the local shoe store and fitted with a pair of proper walking shoes. And I don't know where they got the Lyle stockings for us, but Lyle stockings and a red armband to go on our coat. And we wore civilian clothing for our basic training. However, about a week after basic training started, we were all marched up, all nine of us, there were just nine of us, all marched up to the quartermaster's doors. And the quartermaster and his sergeant measured us. They measured our necks, and they measured our waists, and they measured our chests, and they measured our legs. And then after about 2 hours, we were issued with uniforms. Nine pairs of coveralls, khaki coveralls, men's coveralls, size small. We looked like fat teddy bears waddling around the parade square. But we didn't get any uniforms for another, oh, I think it was 2 months, 3 months.
So this was October 1941.
That's right. Yeah.
And so it probably was not till around December?
January. About mid-January in Halifax. Now,
yeah.
Some of the other parts of Canada did receive uniform earlier, but not too much earlier, maybe a month.
How did you find messing?
Well, I lived at home. There were, as I mentioned to you, only nine of us,
mm-hmm.
and no accommodation. And so a few of the girls were billeted at the YWCA, and the rest of us were allowed to live at home.
Mm-hmm.
We did, on basic training, we had our noon meal in the men's mess. We had a table off in one corner, and the food was dreadful. We had roast beef, which sounds terrific, but we had roast beef Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. No, fish on Friday. And the roast beef, we claimed the roast beef, was cooked on Monday and then just served Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday the same old piece of roast beef. In fact, the orderly officer came around one day and the nine of us, when asked if we had any complaints, mooed. We were marched on the carpet shortly afterwards and told this was not the way to make a complaint. But it was very poor food.
And
I was fortunate because I only had to have lunch in the mess.
Mm.
The other girls had to take their three meals a day there, and it was very poor food by any standards.
How did you find the entertainment or sports?
Well, you're coming along a bit... later, at first, there was very little provided for the women, but of course later, and it depended where you were. If you were in a city, it wasn't necessary to provide too much entertainment. But on camp, there was sports provided. There might be tennis courts nearby and dances, movies. There was really lots to do on camp, but we are skipping around a little, and certainly when we were on basic training in the early days, there was very little provided for the girls at that time.
How did you find civilian-military relations?
Well, again, when I joined the Army, I can't think of one of my friends whose parents would have allowed them to join. Parents had a lot more influence with their grown-up children in those days, especially daughters. And of all my friends, I was the only one who enlisted in one of the services. I think the attitude of the fathers I've mentioned of my friends was the attitude shared by a lot of civilians. They were not, or I should say, did not approve of women serving in the armed forces.
What was your pay like?
Women were paid 2/3 of a man's pay. And that, of course, applied in civilian life and for many, many years after the war ended. I think we received about $28 a month basic pay, and of course we received trades pay. If you were a secretary, a typist, whatever, you received pay for that.
Could you describe your training a little bit? Not in too much detail. I'm going to get into that in a minute.
Of course, it depended on what course you were taking. Basic training, we were taught how to march, a certain amount of army rules and regulations. We were taught how to recognize an officer and how to salute, and some map reading. But that was just the basic training. Then, do you want to know in my own case the type of training I had?
Yes, go on.
We had ongoing training after the basic training. At night we would have drill, first aid, again map reading, and army regulations, etc. And then the March 1942, the second course at McDonald College, it was a course both NCOs and officers attended, an administration course. And again, we were taught, again, drill, of course, map reading, army administration, studying KRCAN, which was King's Rules and Regulations. And there were some officers in that course because, of course, the first officers came in directly with their commissions and did not attend an officer training course. That was in March 1942. By that time, I was an acting corporal without pay. And in June of 42, I attended the first officer's training course, and that was held at St. Anne de Bellevue as well.
I see. And where did you go after that in your training? Okay, could you continue on a bit?
After the officer's training course?
Yeah.
After that, I didn't attend training courses to any great extent, but now it was my turn to start training the women who were under my command, because their training had to be kept up. Mm-hmm. I don't think I took another course until October 1943, when I was sent on an administration course to Kempville. That was a course for both men and women, an officer's course. And when I was in England, I was sent on two courses, one messing, a messing course, which I certainly could have used years earlier. I knew nothing really about kitchens, and also...
Where was this messing course?
That was in England, when I was in England.
Where in England? Do you remember the place?
Yeah, it's a place called Rosset in North Wales, and that too was a course for both men and women officers.
What was your specialty, or did you have a specialty in your training?
Not in my training. It was that was quite general. Naturally, officer training, you were being trained to be an administrative officer in the CWAC. Although when I was first commissioned and returned to Halifax, I still worked at district headquarters in the G branch, and I was what they called a staff learner. But shortly after that, because of the shortage of clerk officers, I was given a platoon, a company actually, in that September in Halifax. Going back to the officer's training course, we spent a lot of our time that month practicing precision drill under a Captain Natalie Plattner. She at one time had been with the League of Health and Beauty. We studied precision drill and practiced it for a military tattoo to be held in Molson Stadium in Montreal. After the tattoo, which was in June of 1942, the newspaper reporters likened the cadets to the Rockettes. High praise indeed. And I must say we did look quite smart in our summer uniforms. This was the unveiling of the summer uniforms, and the first time they had been seen in Canada.
How effective would you say your training was?
That's a very difficult question to answer 45 years after the course. We only had 1 month's training, and we covered a lot of subjects. I think perhaps the weakness was that we were being sent back to our units to handle personnel, and we did not have any training on how to work with personnel. In fact, not many of the women who came in from civilian life had had any training in civilian life along that line, except perhaps teachers.
Were there any humorous incidents that you can remember that stand out?
Well, I mentioned the day we had our uniforms fitted. I think that was rather humorous, and I thought mooing at the orderly officer was humorous. And there were many over the years, naturally, but I think I'll leave it at those two.
So where were you next stationed? Where were you stationed after your training now?
I think I've mentioned earlier I was sent back to Halifax, and I worked at district headquarters in the G branch as a staff learner. Then I recruited that summer, just sent off with a staff car and a driver and no training to recruit throughout Nova Scotia. I think I was gone about 3 weeks, and I would visit newspaper officers and talk with editors. I would make a speech in the theater during intermission. I attended luncheons and tea parties with the IODE almost every day, recruiting women. By now, we had our uniforms, and we were, huts were being built for accommodation.
What date is this?
This, by now, we're in the summer of 1942. I don't know if I've mentioned or not that in that September I was appointed company commander. I was all off second lieutenant, but I had a company in Halifax, a company of girls that fall.
Fall of 42.
You probably wonder what a company commander did. In a way, she was like a dean of women in a university. Except with perhaps more responsibility. You did have responsibility for the discipline. Earlier you mentioned sports and entertainment, and we were responsible for that, as well as training and the administration of the company, seeing the girls were properly fed and quartered and clothed. So we had a lot of responsibility. Have you another question?
Yes. How long were you in Halifax there then?
In Halifax until January 43, and then I was sent to Sydney, Nova Scotia as a company commander, and I was there just 4 months, from Sydney to Dundurn, Saskatchewan. You might be interested to know it took me 6 days to travel from Sydney to Dundurn by train. Sydney to Halifax, change trains to Montreal, change trains to Regina, change trains to Saskatoon, and then be driven across the prairies by staff car to Dundurn, Saskatchewan. I arrived in Dundurn in May 1943. I was only stationed in Dundurn for about 4 months, and I'll tell you why. I met my husband-to-be. He was the S&T officer in Dundurn, and we fell in love and were married. Unfortunately, one, at least in the Army, male and female officer who get married cannot stay on the same station, and so I was transferred to Regina and again given a company there. To go back to Sydney, I was promoted to captain before I was sent to Dundurn, Saskatchewan. After Regina, I was in Regina for a year before I went overseas, and then when I returned from overseas, stationed in Ottawa, and retired in Ottawa in 1945.
Could you go into your overseas duty?
Yes. Actually, I was sent overseas with a group of 10 other women. Quack officers.
What date was this?
In November 1944. And I can remember we were outfitted with a tin hat, haversack, gas mask, and cape. And we sailed from Halifax in November 1944 on the Andes.
How was your trip?
Well, there were seven of us in a small cabin, and one of us slept on the floor, and I happened to be the lucky one. And I was desperately seasick for the first few days. However, seasick or not, you were supposed to turn up for boat drill each morning on deck, and if you didn't make it to the mess hall, to the salon, no food was brought to your cabin. The trip over after that was quite pleasant because we went quite a way south. That was to escape the U-boats, and then across the Atlantic, and the weather was sunny and hot. We all arrived in England with, if not suntan, sunburns. In England, the 10 of us were sent to various ATS camps. We were not with the Canadian Army. This is what they called a cook's tour, and Canadian officers were sent to Britain, and ATS officers were sent to Canada.
Could you just mention what ATS stands for?
I think it's Auxiliary Territorial Services, but I'm not positive now. But they were the equivalent of the quack in Britain. They were the British women. So I was stationed on an ordnance camp with an ATS company. I was the company commander for a short while and adjutant to the camp commander for a while, and as I mentioned earlier, sent off on one or two courses. The ATS officers were sent to Canada and did the same type of work in Canada. It was an exchange of ideas, a learning experience for us.
So after that, you came back to Canada. Now, how long did you say you spent almost a year in England?
No, I was only in England 4 months.
Oh, 4 months.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then you came back, and you came back to Ottawa.
Back to Regina and was immediately posted to Ottawa.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a company in Ottawa. Most of the women worked at military headquarters in Ottawa, most of the women in my company at that time. And I was in Ottawa until October 1945. The war ended, of course, in May of that year in Europe and in August in the Far East. And I was quite anxious at this time to get out of the army and settle down and start a family. I think most of the CWAC members were anxious to do the same thing, settle down with their husbands.
Could I ask you to describe some of your duties as a company leader when you were in each of those places you mentioned, in Regina and in Ottawa?
I think I've gone into that in fair detail earlier, in that we were in charge of administration and discipline, etc. Mm-hmm. And I think I've covered that in this talk.
Okay. Well, now,
however, if I had not been married, I would like to have stayed in the service and made it my career. And some of the women, of course, did. Well, earlier in this interview, you asked about food, and I gave you a funny anecdote about the food on basic training. However, I must tell you that the rations received in the Canadian Army were excellent. It was the chef, or cook, I should say, who made the difference. And if you were fortunate to have a good cook in your kitchen, your meals were very good. If you had a poor cook, the meals weren't. Let me push it up. I don't think I've mentioned in our interview the jobs that the women did in the Army. They were laboratory technicians, telegraphists, wireless operators, drivers, clerical staff, stenographers, typists, bookkeepers, hospital assistants, cooks, waitresses, general duty. You name it, and the women did it. They did prove that women could perform most jobs as well as a man's. Perhaps the jobs that took more brawn than brains, they did not have the physical strength for, but in the war years, they did most jobs as well as the men.
So, is I guess that's all for this interview then?
Yes. There, of course, there are so many things I will think of after you've gone, and 4 years is a long time to cover in one short interview. One's memory sometimes isn't too clear, although most of what I've told you, I do have old clippings and a diary that I kept for the first 2 years, at least, that I was in the service.
Well, if that's it, then thank you very much, and that's it. Thank you.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Yeah.